All right, I'm recording. You better be this time, too.
Wait for it. All right, I'm recording.
Cool. Sweet.
Yeah, I don't know why I have to do it manually now. I guess good that I know now.
Start this in a second. All right. Sure. Well, I'll just ask you what you thought of it at the beginning there. Okay. Should we just jump right in? We can talk later.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, cool. All right, so here we go. Part two of three of this Gondolin stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How you doing, Clifford?
Doing well. How about yourself, Patrick?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. So what are we covering in this second part?
So we talked a little bit about the origins of Gondolin. Its creation last episode. This episode, we're talking about the end of Gondolin, the fall of Gondolin.
No.
No?
This one's tour.
Oh, okay. My apologies. All right. So this episode, we are talking about that tonight, right? We're just
splitting
it into
we'll
two.
Do both. Yeah, it's going to be split into two things.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This episode, we're talking about Tur, where he comes from, and what he has to do with Gondolin.
Cool. What'd you think of it? Oh, wait, so first of all, okay, so we're pulling this from something that Tolkien had written around the publication of Lord of the Rings, is what the Sun thinks. It's okay. Of Tur and his coming to Gondolin. You can find it in it's the first chapter of Unfinished Tales.
Mm-hmm.
Unfinished Tales is a book that Christopher Tolkien released after the Silmarillion because it was just a bunch of his dad's notes that didn't mm-hmm. fit in anywhere. So he's like, oh, maybe fans will like this. Mm-hmm. And then it was such a hit that he went on to do the 12-part series, The Histories of Middle-Earth, which is basically his dad's notes from 1917 all the way to his death in 1973.
And was any portion of this... I know Gondolin is in the Silmarillion. What portion of this or what overlap does this all have with the Silmarillion?
This is towards the end of the Silmarillion proper story.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, like all the good guys at this point, had kind of been starting to get picked off, as we talked about with that unnumbered tears battle.
Right.
Remember
right.
from the last time? So Gondolin's one of the few places that's left at this point where
okay.
we're at in the story.
Okay. Yeah. But this is. This is like a side story, basically. Like, could you piece it in neatly with the Silmarillion?
Yes, it's very important.
Okay.
I'm not going to say why.
Okay. I'll leave it at that. I guess I'm curious. The Silmarillion is the closest thing to this that Tolkien actually published. And everything we're talking about here is...
No, Tolkien didn't even publish Silmarillion. That came out after his death as well.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so effectively everything we're talking about is a collection of stuff from Tolkien's notes, the majority of which in general is from the Silmarillion, but tonight specifically we're talking about stuff from Unfinished Tales and from the History of Middle-Earth.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. All right.
Cool.
So for this episode, what we're going to do is... Since I assume most people don't have Unfinished Tales, I don't know if you really want to go out and buy it. Though it actually is worth your money. It'd probably only be like $10. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, though, what we'll do is I'll go through the story, and Clifford's read it, so he'll just jump in and say stuff that he thought was cool or ask me questions about it
mm-hmm.
or say stuff that he think was important. Mm-hmm. But before that, what were your initial thoughts about it? Did you like it?
One of the most intriguing parts of it is of all of this backstory to Lord of the Rings, this seemed like the most intense personal focus on an individual, or like the most character development that I've seen for a lot of these stories. You might dispute that, but I had said in the last episode that a characteristic of a lot of the old Germanic and European mythology that Tolkien is basing these stories off of is very plot oriented and tends to be low on character development, like very procedural. This guy went into this battle, killed this many people, then he went here, this person did this, and it's not super personal. And I was surprised reading this story how emotional it was, and how much like Tuur's sort of personal struggle was the emphasis of the story.
Well, see, Tuur's whole story is one chapter of the Silmarillion, and it is like the simplistic version that you're talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but this is an expansion of it because he wanted to write a fuller tale for that one.
Right.
Like for some of the stories in the Silmarillion, he has like full tales of them, and so that's mm-hmm. what we're pulling from here to go through the story.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So also,
another thought: Tuur is a badass. I'm sure we'll cover that.
Okay.
But he's pretty cool. Seems like.
Yeah, he is cool. He's a good guy. He's one of my favorites. Where to start here? Okay, so we remember Hurin and Huor.
Mm-hmm.
So, we remember Hurin from our dragon special. Or, no. We remember Hurin and Huor from our last episode. And then from our dragon special, we know that Turin is the son of Hurin.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Yeah. All right. So now we're dealing with... Well, you already said the main character's name of the story, and we already said the title. We're dealing with Tuur.
Mm-hmm.
So, who do we think he's related to?
Son or grandson or great-grandson of Hur.
Yeah, so he's the son of Hur.
Okay.
So,
that's what I figured.
So, right before Hur went to war, I guess he had married Ryan? Rain? Ryan?
Okay.
It's not Rain. I'm just pronouncing that wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ryan? We'll say Ryan, okay? Or Rian. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
Man.
So anyway, yeah. So they got married, and then she must have gotten pregnant before the battle, because actually we know that she got pregnant because Huor picked out the name for his kid, or maybe he didn't know, but he wanted the name to be Tuur. Anyway, she got pregnant. Huor went off to the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, died because he got shot in the eye by an arrow.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. And so then Ryan. Trust the kid to the gray elves that are living in the land of Huor's land, you know.
So basically, Tuur's mom wanders off into the wilderness when her husband goes to battle because she can't stand staying at home, right?
Yeah, she's super distraught.
And in the middle of the wilderness, she runs into some gray elves living there who take her in.
Correct.
To look after her.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know if that's the best parenting model, but we're not going to question it. All
right.
We'll just go with it. Feel bad for her. She didn't make the best choices in life. Anyways, so Tuur, what we know about him, he's very tall and has blonde hair after his father's folk. So most of the Hurin and Huor, their family comes from a lot of blondes. Though I don't know if I never picture either of them actually with blonde hair. But I guess they probably did. Because Turin definitely didn't. He had black hair. We know that.
Okay.
Anyways,
okay.
That's some other stuff. All right, whatever. Okay. So now, if you remember when we were talking about that Battle of Unnumbered Tears, you remember that it went bad for that guy named Methros in the East. He was that guy that was captured by the Eagles, and he's friends with Fingon. You remember him?
Right, right.
Yeah. So there was a bunch of men that had betrayed him, and that's how like that side of the battle went to hell. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so
let's do a brief little recap. Methros is
the oldest son of Fëanor. The sons of Fëanor live east in this place called Beleriand. Remember that? That's the whole subcontinent. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And so Methros and Fingon, remember they were buds because Fingon saved Methros from the eagle or from Morgoth, and then the eagles came to help him. Remember that?
Right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So they, and Fingon and his brother Turgon and all the other Noldor live out west. And so then the two combined forces to set up this battle of Unnumbered Tears. And it was going well, but then Methros got betrayed by a group of men. And then their side of the battle fell apart. So then everybody, all the evil guys that were fighting them, just came over to the west to kill Fingon and Turgon, who we'll talk about again.
Okay. And just to tie that back, that was around the time, or just before, Turgon split off, took part of the Noldor, the light elves, with him, and formed the city of Gondolin without telling anyone else, right?
He had done that about like 200 or 250 years before that, but he came out of hiding for that battle.
Okay, and then returned afterwards.
Right, and then Hurin and Huor defended him so that he could get back safely.
Gotcha.
And then they died.
Okay.
Or, well, Hurin did die, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah. So, that's the thing. So, anyways, those men, though, that had betrayed Methros, their reward, in quotes, from Morgoth, who's the ultimate bad guy that they're fighting, we remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Their reward was they get to go live in this Dor Lomond place, which is where Hurin and Huor were from.
Mm-hmm.
And so they oppress all the elves that are there and all of Tuor's remainder of his people. And so the elves go live in some caves of Androth until Tuor's 16, and he's living with the elves. And he learns how to use an axe and a bow from them. So that'll be a specialty, is an axe. We'll have to remember that throughout. But they eventually know it's time to leave, and so they seek a secret way to leave Hithloom. So if you imagine Beleriand, remember how we went over this?
Right.
There's like one...
For everyone who doesn't, unlike Patrick, who understands my analogy of North America, Beleriand is like the Bering Strait where the land bridge existed before Russia and Alaska were separated.
Yeah, but it's not ice and cold.
Right, but it was a continent that no longer exists.
It also
in the time of Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, and it'd also be bigger.
And it can,
it'd be bigger than that. It'd be like... Okay. Yeah, okay, but sure, yeah.
But it roughly connects Valinor in the far east to Middle-earth in the middle, and it bridges the sea between them. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so anyways, though, but Beleriand, we had talked about there's that one mountain range that horizontally cuts across it, and there's, like, gaps through it, and the gaps are really strategic points. Like, that's what Hurin and Huor defended so that Turgon could escape.
Right.
Okay, so on the sea side of that, so the eastern side, there's, like, basically a land that's just north of that horizontal part, but still part of Beleriand. And so if you... It's surrounded by mountains on, like, all sides besides the sea. But even the sea kind of has some mountains near it, or hills or something.
Okay.
And so that's Hithloom. So it's, like, kind of like a pretty sheltered, mountainous, you know, mountains-fenced area.
Okay. All right,
and so you can guard mountain passes, so it's actually kind of hard to get out of there and escape.
Okay.
So now these elves are deciding, okay, we want to leave, but the only way that we can go is a way that the guards, which are the evil men, and then there's also orcs roaming about outside from now on.
Mm-hmm.
The only way we can go is through this gate of the Noldor that Turgon made. And we remember Turgon is
the king of Gondolin.
Yeah.
And he's not one of the sons of Fëanor. Right?
No, he's the brother of Fingon, who is buds with Methros, but they're all cousins, you know?
Right.
Turgon,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, and we had already seen in the
battle. These are all sort of like the second generation of elves to have come over from Valinor.
Well, they were youngsters when they came over. Like they were
right. They're Fëanor and Fingolfin. Yeah. And
but they were they came with them. They just weren't the leaders of the coming over.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So cool. Anyways, Tuor's the main elf that he's entrusted to is Aenel, and he tells Tuor of Turgon and the hidden Gondolin, and it sounds really cool. It reminded me, like, whenever they talked about Turgon at the beginning of the story, it sounded like Willy Wonka, you know, like he's mysterious in some chocolate factory somewhere. Except Turgon's got some awesome hidden city Gondolin where there's no evil about, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So but I guess basically, to summarize Tuor's early life, his mother leaves him with the elves to foster him. He gets raised by elves and becomes sort of a valiant young man among them. He has all the best descriptors attached to him. And then I remember basically he becomes an outlaw. The elves, who are kind of his extended family now, get chased out of their homeland.
Right. They have to make for that gate of the Noldor, but then Tuor on the way gets separated from them because I think he just goes and fights some men, and then he gets captured and is taken as a slave first before an outlaw.
So, and then he spends I'm not really sure how long, but multiple years as a slave.
3 years as a slave, and then
to some man who is sworn to Morgoth.
Right. So one of those bad guys that got resettled there. The head of them, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, so he's enslaved there for 3 years, and then...
And this is... It sounded like this was a formative thing for him. Like, it's pretty brutal, but he's well-fed, and he's... The king respects him, and so he's kind of... He's beaten down, but not in a way that's destructive.
Right.
This is sort of a whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger situation.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and then he escapes that, and then he becomes an outlaw for 4 years, and he goes back to those caves where he was living. Remember?
Right.
Yeah.
And then this was a phase. So he's an outlaw. He's lost all the people that he loves. He has this kind of this dream or vision of finding Gondolin at that point, right? Or he doesn't quite know about Gondolin yet, but he's searching for something.
Yeah, right now I think he'd settle for just the Gate of the Noldor so that he can escape from the Hithlum place, which is that area that he's stuck in, the mountains.
Right.
You know, so, like, he can't get out. And so, like, that's kind of like Gondolin because Turgon made it. And so, you know, like I said, like, that Willy Wonka image of Turgon, he really wants to, you know.
Okay, so that's actually something I didn't pick up on. He's trying to escape from a certain area.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gate of the Noldor is, like, the passageway out.
Yeah, it's a secret passageway so that nobody
would
know.
Okay, see, I was very confused. I thought this was all sort of one sort of lengthy, convoluted journey through one place to another, eventually to Gondolin. But that actually makes sense. But it's also kind of weird that he's stuck in one mountainous enclave that's become gone from being a little bit of a paradise to being a nightmare. Because it's been conquered, right?
Right.
Just as it was easy to defend, now it's easy to protect its borders. So he eventually manages to escape, kind of led by Ulmo, who's the god of the water, basically.
Well, there were two elves that were probably kind of mythically, not directly, but indirectly sent by Ulmo, who help him find the gate. And then
but even before he's led to them, he's kind of... Something about the power of the water around him, like the stream starts bubbling.
Yeah.
The spirit of the water almost draws him in that direction, right? So at this point, it kind of jumped right into this. He's basically chosen by Ulmo, right? He's chosen by this water god.
Right, so...
To do something special.
Yeah, so now we don't know... We haven't gone over the full Silmarillion story. But anyways, when the Noldor left, we had said this before, they get... exiled and banished, like they're not welcome back, and they're even cursed because of some stuff that happened. But and so like all the Valar, the gods, you know, they abandon the Noldor. They're like, all right, you guys just gotta, you know, you're on your own if you're gonna go do this crazy mission to re-get these Silmarils. And you know, Fëanor's leader of that. But Ulmo, he's probably like number two on the list, the most powerful Valar, and
who's number one.
We haven't met him yet.
Okay.
But it's Manwë. He's the Lord of Bears. Yeah.
Okay.
And but anyways, Ulmo's like the water one, you know, the water god. Okay. And so he doesn't, you know, he's a lone wolf, like, and he'll kind of just do what he wants. So he's like, even if most of the gods are saying like, yeah, we really can't help you, I'm still going to help you because I want this to get done. So he's like, so he knows, you know, in the last episode, we said like a bunch of prophecies and a bunch of those are going to get fulfilled here. And it's, Tuor's the big guy to do this, but not the biggest, actually.
Well, so, okay, so I understand all that. I'm a little bit confused, because Tuor is a man, not an elf.
Right.
But Ulmo has somehow chosen him to help out the Noldor, who are elves, in their crusade against Morgoth.
Yep.
Why Tuor? Why a man? Why someone? I mean, why not an elf?
Well, there's prophecies already set up. I don't know. I mean, just use whatever's at your disposal, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, fair. He just says this guy's a valiant guy and he's going to do great things.
Yeah, and I also don't think the story goes in enough depth. Even the lengthy account, I don't think the story goes in enough depth to figure out why.
Fully.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Anyways, Ulmo has become...
Hold on. Let's just run through the story really quick, and then we'll get to Ulmo in a second.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So, he finds the Gate of the Noldor because these two elves help him get there. The right. walk out of there is really cool. There's a bunch of geography that, like, even I get confused about, so we'll just skip over it. Anyways, let's just say, long story short.
I will say, for anyone not reading this, I was also confused by it. I had a very hard time getting my bearings, even though I enjoy maps. But it sounded vaguely like
the description.
He's venturing slowly through the mountains, out of the mountains, towards a coastline.
Yeah.
So the landscapes are changing around him,
and the landscapes were really cool too.
Right,
good,
it's like
that's
stunningly beautiful.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't read the geography. Just read the landscape.
Yeah, but he's slowly moving close to the coastline, so you can imagine like a mountain habitat slowly transitioning to the strange windswept cliffs of a coastline. Thinking like Northern California or Ireland or something like that. Sort of epic coastline facing the ocean.
Yeah, and so he ends up coming to the land where Turgon used to dwell before the Noldor went and hid themselves in Gondolin.
Mm-hmm.
And that place is called Neverest. And okay. And so then eventually he gets all the way to the coast because he's like really stirred by the sea, and that's actually a big deal. We won't actually really touch on it in any of these Gondolin special parts, but Tur's really affected by the sea, and he's like, no man has greater love for the sea. Some elves have greater, but no man has more than Tur ever does or will. Anyways, though, he walks along the coast and he sees this great hall that's abandoned, Vinyamar, which is where Turgon's like palace basically was before he left.
Right.
So he goes in there. And he walks in and finds the weapon and armor that Turgon left. If you remember that story, it was the first one we told in the last episode. Turgon left behind some like weapons and everything that Olmo had told him to do. Because then it's like, well, this guy's eventually going to come to Gondolin. And then you're going to recognize him that he's my messenger.
You know? Oh, yeah. Okay. I forgot about that detail, but that makes a lot of sense.
Right. And so now the description of him putting on the armor and then walking out and looking at the sunset was really cool. Worth the read. Get the book, you know. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was super cool. It's kind of spooky, like reading this whole part, because he's found what's basically an abandoned palace in this beautiful but very like raw wild landscape that's kind of abandoned.
Well, nobody's there. Yeah, nobody's there right now.
No one's there, but it clearly was once occupied. It doesn't feel dangerous to him, but it's also very exposed to the elements, and so it's not like he stumbled upon some strange oasis. It's very peculiar.
Yeah. So now, this is the important part. So there's a storm brewing, and he walks down from the palace onto the beach. And then from there, Olmo himself comes out of the water to confront him, which is pretty big deal, because no man has ever seen one of the Valar before, ever. So
right. And even most of the elves haven't, right?
The ones that went to Valinor all have. But the ones that haven't, yeah, that's a big deal, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, he says he's going to send Tur to warn Gondolin, but also from him shall come a hope beyond sight, or beyond thy sight, and a light that shall pierce the darkness. So from Tur, there's going to come hope beyond like light, or sight, or light, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of interesting. So yeah, so why Tur? That's a question with a lot of these people that we've met. Why Bilbo? Now why Tur? I mean,
right.
Again, when you read the whole story, it's like, well, he lived up to the bill, you know? It's like he accomplished his mission, usually.
Right. And my way of looking at it is not, why did we pick this guy to go through this strange, amazing sequence of events? But instead, we happen to be reading about the one who made it through the strange, amazing sequence of events. That makes any sense.
Kind of, but we don't get examples of where people automatically failed. Then again, that's kind of that's part of your point, but we don't have any indication that there were others that they had tried to send who failed. Though, all right, well, okay, so there is somebody that failed that we're going to meet in a second. But let's just go through this. The description of Olmo was pretty cool. let me see. What last words of Olmo? Okay, if you make it to Turgon. Oh yeah, yeah. So Olmo's like saying, like, Tuor is pretty nervous. He's like, well, I don't know, like, what am I gonna do if I ever get to Gondolin? Like, I don't know what to say. And Olmo's just like, mm-hmm. Well, if you ever make it to Turgon, he doesn't say that you will. If you ever get there, then uh-huh. I'll give you the power to speak whatever you need to say next. Okay. And then I'll send someone out of the sea to guide you to Gondolin. So then from there, there's this epic storm, like hurricane wind stuff, like mm-hmm. everything's flying all over. And Tuor has, like, he's got to struggle back up the cliffs because the tide's coming in and he's in trouble. And so he gets to Vinyamar, and then, like, the whole night there's a terrible storm. And then the next day he looks out at the sea and he sees that there's an elf washed up on the shore. And the elf's name was Varanwë.
Mm-hmm.
And should we just kind of blow through some of this plot a little bit?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I was going to say, basically up to now, Tuor is, I mean, he's described as being a great fighter at this point, very strong, sort of like a valiant individual. But for the most part, he's kind of lost. He's wandering. He's literally, like, wandering around looking for a home, sort of looking for a purpose. He's not really a teenager at this point, but, like, he's, I would say, still in sort of like a discovery phase. He's had a relatively brutal uprising, or like upraising, yeah. You know, like raised by elves who are not his family, but became his family. And then he's taken as a slave, and now he's escaped and lived off the land in a pretty hard way.
I think
Olmo has come to him as like his guiding light, basically. Olmo is giving him his purpose in life.
I think, he definitely gives him direction, because now it's like, mm-hmm. All right, you're going to go to Turgon, who you've always heard felt like a strange, like, longing to in your heart, because you knew your dad, like, knew him and everything, and he sounds like a big hope anyways. But yeah, now it's, like, fulfilled that you're going to go to him. Also, interesting, like, at this point, Tuor is probably 23 or 24, right. And now we're reading, like, the updated version, but the original version of the story that he wrote, he would have uh-huh. wrote in 1917, which he would have been right around 24 or 25 at that time,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of interesting. So it's like, I don't know if there's like, his life already had purpose at that point because he's married, but he's still in the war. But yeah, so right. I don't know. That might be a reflection, like, oh, I'll just make him the same age I am, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's projecting himself onto
right.
the tour
right.
to some extent.
All right, so anyways, let's get through some plot here. Let's just chug along. All right, so Varanwë, mm-hmm. this guy was from Gondolin. He was, mm-hmm. So first of all, he was born in Everest, so he crash-landed on, like, the place where he was born.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Gondolin with Turgon, and then, but his dad is one of the, or no, his mom is one of the, like, the Grey Elves, the Sindar, and so they all love the sea. So after the battle, after one of the big battles, and then definitely after the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, Turgon sending a bunch of elves down the river, like the big river that's there. We gotta go over this geography. So from that mountain range that cuts across, there's a river right. that starts that goes down. It's called Sirion. So it runs north to south. Think of like the Mississippi River of this
right,
continent.
Right.
All right. So it runs down there. So Turgon sends guys down the river. They get to the bottom, and then it opens up west across. If you go west, you go across the sea, and that's where Valinor is. So he right. sends guys to the bottom of the river, tell them to make really big boats with anybody that's down there, because there's good guys that live at the bottom. And uh-huh. they're going to sail across the sea and try to plead the Valar for help. So he sent, like, about 7 ships or something like that. Anyways, for 7 years he's been sending ships. And mm-hmm. none have made it, because Varanwë says that. And Varanwë's was the last that he sent out, and it was turned around, and it was sailing back, and then they were in that big storm that had just hit the night before, and then right. Varanwë's ship wrecks, and then Varanwë's the only one sent up. And so anyways, he's going to be Tuor's guide back to Gondolin, because he right. sees the army, he hears Tuor's story, he's like, okay, I'm not actually supposed to lead outsiders into Gondolin, but this uh-huh. is obviously a special exception, so let's do this.
Yeah, you speak with the voice of Olmo, sort of.
Right.
Right.
Right. Now,
and the fact that you've seen Olmo is shocking in itself, and et cetera.
Yeah. Now, they have to do the journey in the middle of winter, which is going to be hard. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. And so, luckily, Olmo kind of protects him the whole time, to where it seems like, according to the story, they might actually even be, like, literally invisible. Or their cloaks are kind of, like, they can kind of blend in with the surroundings, like camouflage, right. Like really, right. Really good magical camouflage kind of stuff, right. You know? Right. So anyways, what they do is they end up just going directly east along that horizontal mountain range that cuts through, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is very surprising because everybody would have thought the Hidden City would be far from the north, but they're actually still pretty far north, and Morgoth lives up north. That's like where he's from.
In other words, you're saying Gondolin is not actually as far from Angband, Morgoth's fortress, as you might expect, given the size of this continent. They're actually kind of close together.
Right. All right. And so now on their way, let's see. It's kind of interesting. They're at this one pool of Imvarin. And so actually, you remember that Glaurung the dragon that we talked about in the dragon special?
Right.
So
right.
He had passed through there and like destroyed the whole place. And now, uh-huh. As they were passing through there, they actually see Turin running through to go back into Hithlum to his homeland to find like his mom and stuff.
Right.
So if you those two are actually first cousins, but they had never met each other, and right. This is the only time their paths actually cross.
And they realize they're first cousins?
Nope. Certainly. They just kind of Turin's really depressed and screaming and crazy, and uh-huh. He just runs past him without stopping. And they're just like, okay, we're not going to stop him, but that guy's weird. Right. You know? All right. Crazy guy. Right. They make eye contact. That's about
it. That's because Hur and Hurin are brothers.
Right. Yep.
So Tur and Turin are cousins.
Yep. And, yeah, so I don't know. It's kind of if you ask me, it's a missed opportunity to go on like a little adventure together. Like nothing. Yeah, it didn't have to be something big, but they could have just, you know, teamed up for like, you know, an episode. but whatever. I didn't write the story. Anyways, you can also, if you want, like when you read the Silmarillion, you'll see a lot of parallels between Turin and Tur's stories. Uh-huh. We're not going to get into those because Turin's story is too long and depressing. And yeah, I mean, you can go look at that yourself. We're just dealing with Tur tonight.
Right, right.
All right. So anyways, they're marching through this super brutal winter. And Tur is a tough guy, but he's a man. And so he's, like, having trouble enduring this. But Varanwë just keeps telling him, like, we're getting close, you can make it. And Varanwë's an elf, and so elves are just stronger than men, according to the story. So they're going, but it's really hard, like, hard going. Again, you know, they're still all over the ground. So then they finally get to this one orc highway that runs north to south that is guarded heavily, and they can see the fires dotted along the way where all the orcs are camped out and like kind of keeping watch, kind of keeping warm near these fires. And so they're like, okay, this can be hard, but we got to go across. And Tur's like, nah, man, I'm killing all the orcs at one of these fires to go sit and get warm. Probably like, that's a terrible idea, buddy. Like, I will abandon you if you do this. So yeah. we're going to go ahead and do this. So they get across, and it was actually kind of interesting because the orcs, they had like their cloaks, so the orcs couldn't see them. But they definitely heard somebody go past, and they smelled somebody go past. So they were checking him out, and so like they go after him, but they didn't pursue heavily because they're like, ah, whatever. You know, we're actually only interested in catching one man. And it turns out, ironically, that man is Turin the cousin, because they thought he would come that way at some point. So that's who the orcs really want to get. They know nothing of Tur. Like, they don't even know he exists, really.
Right, right.
So anyways, they're walking from there, and then It's more dramatic in the book, but they find the hidden way into Gondolin. Varanwë shows them that, and then they basically get there. It took them 37 days of traveling in the winter like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, they finally get to the hidden entrance. The first guards meet them. Tur basically tells them, like, you know, gives them the rundown, like, hey, I'm sent by Olmo, I'm the guy, you know? And they're like, okay, so they pass through the seven gates on the way. And again, that's like dramatic, but we're just going to skip over it. And anyways, they finally get to the last gate, and Ecthelion, the warden of the great gate, that is there. And so Tur passes through the gate and looks onto the city. Then he drops the robe, revealing the armor that Turgon left at Vinyamar. And all the elves gasp because they know this is the long-awaited messenger for him.
So basically, this is a long journey. Tur and Varanwë become best buds.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
They're super close.
Yeah.
They eventually get to Gondolin, and at first, the guards of Gondolin are like, yo, what do you think you're doing? And Tuor pretty much says, I'm very important and have an important message, and Faramwë vouches for him, and they say, okay, fine. And we get a little description of this epic entry into Gondolin, which is, you know, the most glorious grand city of the entire land at this time.
Right.
And then eventually they come before Turgon, where Tuor gets to...
No, that's a different story, Clifford.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I apologize. I'm skipping ahead.
All right. I think this is...
They've made it into Gondolin.
Well, how do we end the second part? Because we're about... Just if you're wondering, we're doing part two and three in one shot here tonight. But we're going to make you wait for the third part. How should we end this one?
I'd say that... I mean, that's a good end. Like,
I know.
Tuor and Faramwë have reached Gondolin.
That is
a huge part of the journey.
All right, well, let's also say this. Now, we're ending here because this is where Tolkien ended this story. He didn't finish it. He should have told the whole story of Tuor, but he doesn't.
Very weird.
Well, no, he's writing. It's not, you know, we'll get into it.
It's not fully thought out.
Because the whole story is written out in, like, a 1917 version, which is what we're going to talk about in the third part. But right. This was like basically 1951-ish reboot, you know, to make it harmonize better with the full mythology that's in place there.
Right.
Because in 1917, like, it was the first thing he ever put down, like, full story he put down to paper. And so, like, he didn't have his whole mythology fleshed out at that point.
Right.
So that one's not – there's going to be stuff in that we'll talk about here in a second – or that we'll talk about in the next episode. That doesn't line up with the mythology at all. Like, name changes. There's so many different spellings of names, basically.
Right.
So, yeah, but he was redoing it to, like, revamp it, to have the Silmarillion fit with the now-done Lord of the Rings as well. And he just didn't finish it. Why he didn't finish, we don't know, but that's not uncommon with Tolkien. He didn't even finish the Silmarillion. All right, why don't we leave it there then? And part three coming out soon. All right, that'll be the fall of Gondolin.
All right, thanks, y'all.